Okay, welcome everyone. Ready to start. So last week we were discussing we're holding a Parshas Chayesara, the conversation between Yitzchak, between Eliezer and Rivka's family. Lavan, we discussed Lavan, we discussed the whole talk between Rivka and Eliezer, and some fascinating things about the understanding that this union between Yitzchak and Rivka is massive. And it's futuristic, related to the ultimate redemption. Rivka being the Shechina, she understanding the various challenges and hardships that she's going to face until she's ultimately going to come back home, as it says. Vayomer, that he said, "Boy, Baruch Hashem, come, Anochi Panisi Abayis." That's what we discussed last week. Okay, now. Eliezer comes into the house. Let me just find which psukim we're going to do. Okay, we're over here. We're holding by the psukim Perek Chav Dalet, chapter 24 in Parshas Chayesara, pasuk Lamed Gimel, Lamed Dalet, Lamed Hey. That these psukim over here. Eliezer comes into the house of Lavan, and he's given to eat. And then it says, he says, "I will not eat until I speak my words." And they tell him, "Speak." And here's where we find the interesting thing, that the Torah goes ahead and repeats the entire story, all the events that had occurred until this point. And we know how careful the Torah usually is with its wording. And yet over here, we find that the Torah goes into such an elaboration in repeating something that was said before already. It's similar to the Mishkan, where the Torah relates the building of the Mishkan. And we have Parshias, where the Torah goes ahead and tells us all the details of what happened and how they built it, even though it already gave us all the instructions before. So we've already discussed that this is a siman, that this is very important. And similar to the Mishkan, that this is a... come on this side. Hold on just one. So we mentioned that this is a sign that this is very, 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 very important information. And it's for that reason that the Torah puts such an emphasis and a repetition. And in the words of the Chazal, Rab Acha says, Yafa sichason, the sicha, the chatter, the talk of the servants of the fathers is even greater than the Torah of the children. Because there are many gufei Torah, there are many laws of the Torah, in which the Torah only alludes to with an extra letter. If on that extra letter we build the entire, let's say the whole Masechta Sukkah is learned out from so many of the laws in regards to a Sukkah, from the three times the word Sukkah is mentioned, the one and with a Vav, without a Vav, and we have an entire Masechta Sukkah. And yet over here the Torah goes on to spend psukim and psukim and psukim, verses and verses and words and letters, so much in repeating the same story that happened before. So the sages say, you see from here, that the chatter, that the avos are so great, our forefathers are so great, that even their servants' simple talk relating a story is greater than the Torah of the children. However, even though that shows on the mile and the quality and the greatness of the avos, of the fathers, versus the children, that the fathers are so powerful, the fathers are so dynamic, they're so great, that even a servant of theirs stands higher. Even a servant of theirs stands higher than the children. Stands deeper. Oh, hold on just 1 second. I have a repair man. Just give me a second. There's no secretary here.
Okay, you're coming for the package. Yes, sir. Let me show you. Okay,
Yeah.
So the even though this is on the simply referring to the to tell us about it, the greatness of the fathers, but there is something particular since the Torah relates it by the story of Yitzhak and Rivka, so it seems that it is more related to this particular event, not just to the life of the fathers versus the children in general, but something in particular to the life of to the marriage of Yitzhak and Rivka. So we've already mentioned in earlier classes in Chassidus, it says that it that this preciousness. Yes.
Just this one.
This one is fine.
But you can't even read the display.
Yeah. So I can.
That's true. I can use it. But it works.
The situation. Oh, so the so there has to be something. So we had mentioned in earlier classes that this is something unique about the actual dynamics of this marriage of Yitzhak and Rivka versus all the Torah of the children. And it's not just a comparison. This is greater than that. The marriage of Yitzhak and Rivka is the nucleus of all the Torah and the mitzvahs that the children are going to do. That means all our mitzvahs and all the particular accomplishments and great blessings and infusion of holiness and godliness into the world and purifications that we do in, and again enhancing and moving the world towards Mashiach, which we are all partners in. And we're all participating in all of our acts of goodness and kindness and mitzvahs that we do, it is all rooted and it's all empowered by the marriage of Yitzhak and Rivka. Their marriage enabled all of this to happen. They're at the soul of this union. And in Kabbalah, that's called Yichud Ma'en Ban, the unification of two names of God, which is the unification of the name of Ma and the name of Ban. And when we unify these two names, that's really the purpose and that's really the realization of all of Torah and mitzvahs, which we're going to have in the giving of the Torah next week. But now, in our avoda, in our own mitzvah observance, we are occupied with the particulars and the details. Yitzchak and Rivka's marriage was the general empowerment. It was the general unification of these two forces. And general is very good and very, very potent and very powerful to the point where the Torah is spending so much time and elaboration on this wedding and on the preparations for the wedding. But as great as that is, if we don't get into the minutiae, if we don't get into the details and we don't bring it down into all the particulars of life, then we haven't really completed the work. So it's not really saying that, you know, they really, their work was important and our work is not so important. What it's saying is that it is on the foundation of the work that they have done, which is so huge and so great, we can complete their work and complete their task by us all engaging and involving ourselves in this very avoda in a small little way. But the small little way is actually the purpose of it all because it has to reach into the details. This was an element I discussed in my Monday class this week in the shiur. This week called From Sinai to Los Angeles, a very, very, very important class in which we discussed this idea of each and every one of us as a shliach and an emissary to channel the powerful revelation of Har Sinai and the truth that was revealed of God's emes and his true being and how all of everything is just an expression of him, which was displayed in a super mega way by the giving of the Torah. Each and every one of us is a channel to bring that truth into the nooks and crannies, into the little crevices of time and space. And every single one of us is given countless opportunities in everyday life to reveal that aspect of Anochi Hashem Elokecha into the tiny little crumbs of life's experiences. And in that way, we bring the MS of Hashem into the details. And that's exactly this idea. Eliezer and Rivka is Matan Torah, is that massive display of this unity as it relates to the two divine forces that are the underpinnings of creation and what is beyond creation. You see, the name of Ma represents the transcendental, the infinite, the godly. The name of Ban is also a name of God. So again, Ban is not to be understood as creation. Ban is to be understood the godly element that is within creation. So Ban is also holiness, because Ban also comes from the name 52, is the name of the Yud Kei Vav Kei of Hashem. As however, as it has been already, it's related to the idea of Shechina, as Hashem has contracted His infinite power and become a source for all the particulars and all the parts and all the details, so to speak, of creation. And the Yichud of Ma and Ban is this unification between bringing HaKadosh Baruch Hu's infinite transcendental light to unify with the creation down here below. That's why Rivka, let's say, you see that as we discussed in earlier classes, you see that in the life of Yitzchak and Rivka, Yitzchak is above it all. Yitzchak is a holy, holy person, living, born to the holiest of parents, been a Korban Ola. He's a man whose heart and soul is in heaven. He's already been sacrificed for God too. He already experienced total Mesiras Nefesh. His neshama is already the new soul after Mashiach comes. It says he actually passed away then, and he got a new soul. I mean, you're talking about the holiest. Yitzchak is the most removed from any material, physical relationship of this world. He's hardly a physical being. He's an angel on the highest levels of angels. On the other hand, Rivka is just a newcomer. She's a young girl coming from an impure environment. And here she gets married to him, 1, 2, 3. You know, there's no, as I mentioned in many classes, she doesn't even go to seminary, you know, to prepare herself. It's like just like that overnight. And that's the power of this unification between Ma and Ban. And it's interesting what happens. So the ultimate purpose over here is that when Yitzchak and Rivka get married, we draw down Yitzchak's powerful, transcendental, and infinite light of Hashem that is completely untouched and untainted by the creation in any way whatsoever. And we infuse that very light into Ban, which means into the soul of creation, and via the soul of creation into all of her extensions, which the Shechina extends itself into all the parts of the world, even into the most unholiest of places. That's the intention. That's why, what does Hashem say to Yitzchak? Ve'etein liYitzchak ve'arbe ezaro, I increase his children by marrying Rivka. Ve'arbe ezaro, will increase his descendants, and including in that is Yaakov and Esav, as it says, and then it says, Ve'etein le'esav, and I give to Esav as Har Seir. I give him the Mount Seir. So we're talking about Esav, who's not holy, and he's given the Mount Seir, which is a infestation of Klipa. That's like a place swarming with forces of impurity, of unholiness. But we know that eventually what's going to happen, those that have been saved, which means the survivors, which are all of us, today's days, living in the last seconds of exile, as we are now beginning to enter into Mashiach's days, Hashem is giving us, we will go up to the mountain of Seir. Like Yaakov says, which means ultimately our godly convictions and truths are going to chase down the world of Esav and reach into the kishkis, into the very, very bowels, into the very stomach, into the very innermost of the Esav world, to create in Esav a godly conscious being who is living to serve his creator. So that's the idea, that Ma energy, the truths of the transcendental holy light of truth of Hashem, reaches into Ban and reaches, here's where you see this, through his marriage with Rivka, he will have Esav, and then through Yaakov, thousands of years living amongst the Esav's world, carrying the Torah, which the Torah is coming from Ma, the light of the Torah, which is the light of the Yud Kei Vav Kei, of the light of 45, Chachma, Torah is Chachma. Chachma is Koach Ma, the power of Ma. We're entering down all the way into Esav and purifying even Esav. That's Yichud, Ma, and Ban in its fullest meaning. And then we see that Esav's world is also holy, becomes holy, becomes sublimated and elevated, and the farthest reaches of Klipa have become transformed into holiness and into Kedusha. That's its purpose, and that's his meaning. So, but it has to start somewhere, and it starts with Yitzchak marrying Rivka. And this Yichud of Ma'an Ban, by the way, is also, what I'm saying, that Rivka is not Chas V'Shalom Klipa. Rivka is the soul of the world, which also enlivens at the very end even the Klipa and even the unholy. So now let's translate Yitzchak and Rivka also into, when we say Ma'an Ban, it also means Torah and Mitzvahs. Mitzvahs is the related to the Shechina, because we know mitzvahs, the main objective in mitzvahs is two things. First of all, the mitzvahs come from Hashem, Hashem's attribute of Malchus, because mitzvahs are called mitzvahs ha-melech. When we're doing a mitzvah, we're not doing the mitzvah necessarily with yearning, thirsting, longing for transcendence. That too, but the main element of a mitzvah is twofold. We are submitting ourselves, surrendering ourselves with acceptance of the yoke of heaven. We're doing a mitzvah because God told us to do the mitzvah. So it's an element of surrender, and that's why mitzvahs are associated with mitzvahs hamelech. So it's again, it's Hashem as he is the master of the creation, which as we said earlier, that's the energy of Ban, the energy of 52. Hashem is the king over the world, not Hashem as he is to himself. Another element in mitzvahs are all about purification of the world. We do the mitzvahs engaging the physical objects and elements of the world. For example, tefillin, we take the animal hide, this is part of, we used to be a cow, and now we inscribe on it, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. That's one mitzvah, but we know that the sages say that all of the Torah is compared to tefillin. Hikshu kol ha-Torah kula l'tefillin, all the Torah is compared to tefillin, because that is what, meaning when we say all the Torah, we mean all the mitzvahs. All the mitzvahs are compared to tefillin, because the objective of all mitzvahs is to take the animal hide, that which is animalistic and impure in the world, and inscribe echad, reveal God's unity on it. So mitzvahs is creation, it's the earth. Torah, even though it says Torah lo bashamayim, Torah is not in heaven, however, Torah is of heaven that comes down to earth because of the yichud of Ma'an Ban, but Torah is Ma energy, because Torah is Chachma, and you take a look at Torah, Torah is not, when we say Torah, I mean Torah, not mitzvahs, Torah study. See, Torah study is purely transcendental. Even though the subject matter of Torah is worldly, you're learning about the world, but the Torah itself, when you're studying Torah, you're not invested in the world. You're exploring the world through God's eyes, but you're not invested in the actual activity of a worldly, of a physical thing. That's why it says that Torah can never become tameh. Haloi koi devarai ke'esh. My Torah is like fire. Ma'esh, just like fire, enu mekablim tuma. There's no such a thing as fire becoming defiled. So too, Torah is not mekabel tuma. Torah cannot become defiled. So Torah represents something that is above the world. But yet, what does the Torah do? Our avodah is that we make a chibur and Torah and mitzvahs. We join together Torah and mitzvahs. And what does that mean? That if a yid, for example, is a good Jew, and he's following the Shulchan Aruch, meaning, but he basically follows everybody else. What everybody else does, he also does. Or it's hard to imagine being able to do mitzvahs without learning Torah. And obviously, in order to know how to do the mitzvah, you have to get the instructions, and the instructions is already Torah. But that's not really Torah study. It's just, you know, give me the instructions. Let me look into the rabbi's actual halacha lamaisa. Tell me, what do I need to do? Okay. But that's not really Torah. When a person does that, then he can do mitzvahs, exactly what God tells you to do. But the mitzvah, the mitzvahs leave a person, if a Jew is only a mitzvah Jew and not a Torah Jew, that allows the person to be a very, very, very coarse human being. When a person connects mitzvah observance to Torah study as well, Torah elevates a person to a higher plane, to a higher, you're in a God, you're living above, you're higher. And the Torah keeps the mitzvahs kind of in a godlier place. It keeps the mitzvahs in a more elegant, refined, and higher state. And that's the inyan in Torah itself of the unification of Ma and Ban. Keeping these two forces together, mitzvahs should be influenced by Torah study. So, so this is the general idea of this unification. Ma and Ban, the unification of Torah and mitzvahs, unification of the transcendental godliness in the world, realized in Yitzchak and Rivka. But as I mentioned earlier, the purpose and the objective is not the marriage of Yitzchak and Rivka per se, and the intense power of that unification. That's great. That's really, really wonderful. But the main idea is that it has to translate. It has to translate into the lives of the individuals, Jewish people, in our thousands of years of living a life of Torah and mitzvahs while we're very much part of time and space. And bringing this unity into all the specific details of our lives. That's where it has to end up. So here you have an interesting thing. When we are doing all this, all these mitzvahs in our particular, as I mentioned earlier, you don't have the fireworks, you don't have the same power of the marriage of Yitzchak and Rivka, to the point where the Torah gives it much less coverage. The Torah speaks of mitzvah observance only in hints to it. It doesn't speak of it in the same, doesn't give it the same attention as the marriage of Yitzchak and Rivka. Yet, what do the sages say? Yafa, it is better, sichasan, the sicha, the talk of the servants of the father, more than the Torah of the children. Because this Torah, this parasha is kafal, is double. So let's understand. Why does it express itself in the doubling? Why dafka, the idea of doubling? And also, what's the idea when we say, why do the sages choose the word sicha, chatter? So here's an interesting idea. The Rebbe says, Sicha, the word siach, the word sicha, which means their discussion, their idle talk. Siach is gematria 318. Shin yud ches, 318. Now 318 is gematria three times kav. The word kav is 106. Three times 106 is 318. Kav, 106, times 3, is 318. So what does that mean? Kav are the three pathways, the three channels. Torah, Avoda, and Gemilas Chasadim. In other words, Torah, and Avoda, and Gemilas Chasadim, that the sages say in Pirkei Avos, the entire world stands on Torah, and Avoda, and Gemilas Chasadim, is the idea of the specification of this union of Ma and Ban into the details of life. Why are there three separate ways? There's Torah, there's prayer, there's mitzvah. And then in Torah, Avodah, and Gemilas Chasadim, there is how I do the Torah, and there is how you do the Torah, and how every person does it. And it's because when we say it divides into three, the three are just the three main roads, in which later it divides into 613, which later it divides into billions. What is it? The electric pattern is in my office over there, on that wall. So, when we say three, it really represents 613, and not only 613, the billions of individual circumstances in which every single person will end up doing a mitzvah or studying Torah in his life. That's the idea of splitting into three. And here's an idea. Siach of the Avos is all this power of all the mitzvahs concentrated in one nucleus, in one point. Because you needed the marriage of Yitzchak and Rivka to happen in a general fusion as these two powers. Now, after you have the Siach, which is 318, it divides, that very Siach divides into three pathways, which those three pathways are Torah, Avodah, Gemilas Chasadim. That's the Torah of the children, which later will capture that same Siach, but bringing it into the various different narrow individual channels of daily living in our lives. Now, the work is not done until we bring it down into the three kavim, and until each and every one of us shines that light into the small little sections or crumbs of life that we're all given continuously, in all the little encounters that we have daily throughout our life, and the opportunity to do mitzvahs. So that's where it is. However, where do you have the excitement, the fervor, the passion, see, as we get involved in the details of life, one senses the limitations, the boundaries. Words, even though I'm doing a mitzvah and I'm bringing my energy into bun, there is the circumstances of the environment. Because I'm dealing with something big, I'm sorry, with something tiny and small, I can't overwhelm it with blasting light. If I'm talking to someone, for instance, I can be listening, I can come to my own and listen to a Thursday night class and be enthralled with hours of deep Kabbalistic mystical teachings. But if I want to share an insightful teaching when I'm checking out by the cash in Ralph's or by the bank, and I'm meeting the teller, and I want to shine a little godly light over there, I can't pass over the Thursday class of this deep Kabbalistic and Hasidic teachings, because the person's going to blow a fuse. I can't do that. So I just have to find a little crumb. It doesn't have the same free limitlessness, even though I'm taking the inspiration from the class. I'm taking the idea. I'm taking that energy, but in a tiny little crumb. However, when we go back to the source, when we go back to the siach, not into the three kavim, when I go into the siach, over there it's explosive. Over there it's infinite. Over there it's boundless. Over there it's endless, right? So that's the reason why our Torah is not double, and the Torah of the story of the Avos is double. What is the significance of it being double? See, kefil means limitlessness. Kefil really means that it repeats itself. Now, you know, sometimes you can set up if you have, let's say, a playlist of songs on the thing, and you can set up that the playlist should repeat itself when it gets to the end. So technically, when you have something that repeats itself and it swings again, when it ends, it starts all over again, this represents the infinite. I mean, unless I'm going to come and shut it off or the battery is going to go out for whatever reason, or else it will go on and on and on and on. If I don't make it re-loop, then once it's done, it's done, it's finished. So the idea of repetition of something represents the infinite. That's why the sages say that all the letters in the Torah that are kafel, that are double, the letters menatzpach, mem, nun, tzadik, pei, and chav, which are double letters, kulam al shem geula, they all represent geula. Avram Avinu had his geula with the chav, lech lecha. Yitzchak had a geula with mem, atzam tom ma'od, double mem. The Jewish people had the geula with a pei, pakoit pakadati. In the future, the geula is going to be with a tzadik, tzemach, tzamachti. Why? Because redemption is when we finally come out of these little crevices. Because we've been sent into these little tiny places of time and space. We've gone away from that great expansive Beis HaMikdash, Yerushalayim. We've gone into the narrow corridors, to the narrow alleyways of Europe, of the United States. Across the world, we've brought this the light into all the little, into the little channels. Over there, you don't sense the beligue of all the infinite. It's meticulous, detailed work. So you don't have the kefil there. Where do you have the kefil? You have the kefil when you get to the story of Avdei Avos, because this is, I'm sorry, by Geula, by redemption. Redemption is infinite. We go back after Mashiach comes, we'll see all this infinite light. And also, the story of the forefathers over here, here is the infinite dimension of this unification. That's why the Torah repeats it kafel, double. Shabbos, for instance, the sages also tell us. Shabbos is we call iska de Shabbat a kafel. Everything regarding Shabbos is double. We take two challahs on Shabbos. On Shabbos, they offer two sheep, two musafs. Shabbos is a double day. Why is a Shabbos a double day? Same idea. Because Shabbos, we step back from the details of time and space. Shabbos really, even though Shabbos is the seventh day, which the seventh is like considered still time, but we know that Shabbos has an element in it that's beyond time. That's why Sunday we start time all over again. Shabbos we ascend to a place beyond time. Again, we go out of limitations. Shabbos is a time of tashav, returning to a transcendental higher place. Shabbos is double. Shabbos is geula, it's redemption. So Shabbos is another example, tshuva, which is the same idea of Shabbos. What's the difference, for example, we can see in our own lives? The 10 days from Rosh Hashanah to Yom Kippur. We're all in an infinite place because we're not engaged in the details of being a Jew. We're looking at ourselves as our general relationship with God. We're focusing our entire neshama to repair, to rehabilitate, to come back, to attach ourselves. So it's the ultimate Shabbos, Rosh Hashanah, we're crowning God as a king. Yom Kippur, we're screaming Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Achad by Ne'ilah. We're removed, we're fasting, we're above the world. We go into Sukkot, and finally Simchas Torah, we're exploding with joy. Simchas Beis Hoshoeva, Simchas Torah. Why? Because this is all the marriage of Yitzhak and Rivka. We're going into the general union between the Jewish people and God, not into the details. And then during the year, we're back in the details. So tshuva, the sages also say, is related to kafel, to double. But again, the kfelos, the double, is very powerful and very strong. But the siach of the avos, the talk, the chatter of the avos, is 318 because it's made up and it's meant to take that energy. Because here's the idea: sometimes we're very, very inspired only in the month of Tishrei, but we don't see it through into the details. And that's the main lesson of what we're talking about today. You need to see it through into the three kavim. We need to take it down into the details. The Torah did not conclude in Parshas Chayesara with this marriage. After this marriage, we have the rest of the four books of the Torah detailing how all of this intense energy of this unity of Yitzhak and Rivka will find expression in all the aspects of daily living. And for that, you need to have the Torah of the children. For that, you need to have all the following parshios. Yes, you don't have too long repetition, but it's the very same union that's taking place over here, making its way down into the details. And that's the idea of Yafa Sichasana. That's why it's kafel over here, it's double over here. It's a hachana for the redemption. Okay. Now, which this gives us a general idea into the story where we're holding right now, because Eliezer is now going to repeat all the aspects of his relationship with all the aspects of this marriage. Fine. It's interesting that as soon as he starts talking, he says, "Vayomer," and he says, "Eved Avram Anoichi, I am a servant of Avram," and he also says, "Vashem Berach Asadoni Ma'od." Hashem blessed my master very much. Vayigdol, and he became great. Vayitan loitzoinu bakar v'kesef izav avadim, and he gave him sheep, cattle, silver, gold, servants, maidservants, camels, and donkeys. So it's interesting that he mentions eight things that Avram Avinu had acquired. He also says, Hashem blessed my master ma'od. Interesting, he changes the word. Initially, when the Torah speaks about the blessings that Avram Avinu got, right in the beginning of Parshas Chayesara, as an introduction to the marriage, it says, Vahashem Berachas Avram Bakol, with everything. Eliezer doesn't use the word Vahashem Berachas Adoni Bakol, he says, Hashem Berachas Adoni Ma'od. Using the word Ma'od over here is supposed to cause a little bit of an alarm. Because Ma'od means very much. And whenever you see very much, you know you're dealing with Mashiach. Because it says that Mashiach is Adam Arishon's neshama. We spoke about this at many occasions. Adam Arishon's neshama is, because Adam is gematria, Adam David Mashiach. So Adam is the real, but Mashiach is higher than Adam. Because when Mashiach will come, Mashiach is not going to be called Adam. Mashiach is called Ma'od. It's the very same letters as Adam, but you switch the letters. In other words, something far more powerful. Adam is the perfect man that God created. Mashiach is all that we've gained throughout history. All that humanity has gained through its work throughout the treacherous time of history. Adam represents the perfection of God creating man. Ma'od represents the heights the human race personified by Mashiach, as it will be. It's all personified in Mashiach. Mashiach's neshama is the effect of all of our work, of all the Torah mitzvahs and all the Mesiris Nefesh that we've had, all culminating in the superhuman being Mashiach. And that's the. But how do you get from Adam to Ma'od, to very much? It's through the darkness. Without the darkness, then we're still Adam. It's only the journey through the depth, it's only through the journey through the corridors of hell that we've gone through all of our physical, brutal physical and spiritual challenges. And when we make it through at the other end of the tunnel, after thousands of years, we don't have Adam, we have Ma'od. And where do I take this idea? So it's a very, very special piece from this is in the Sefer Be'er Ma'im Chaim, from Chaim of Chernovitz, one of the great Hasidic masters. So he points out that when Eliezer is saying Hashem blessed Avram over here Ma'od very much, this is messianic. He's saying that Avram has, meaning it's not just Avram has a lot of wealth. He has the potential. He's already containing Mashiach's light in Avram. Like we had discussed in earlier classes, that the obvious they've arrived already to the days of Mashiach, and that's why. When it says Ma'od is Mashiach, is the human condition after Mashiach comes, who's called Ma'od. So, and he brings the idea that the sages say when God created the world, Vayara Lakim, God saw after he made everything, Vihine Tov Ma'od. It is very good. So the sages say, Tov, that's the angel of life. Ma'od, that's the angel of death. Or Tov, Zayetza Tov. That's the good inclination. Ma'od, Zayetza Hara. That's the evil inclination. Which is astounding. Now the sages, the Chachamim are teaching us the deepest, deepest, deepest secrets of existence. They are saying that evil inclination and which represent all the failures, all the extreme failures and mishaps or all the stumbling and all the fallings and all the challenges, including death that came about through the sin of Adam and Chava, which is the epitome of the physical challenges, which include illness and poverty and war and struggle and anything one can imagine that represents suffering and darkness in this world. It all of this together will lead to ma'od, to explosive light, infinite light, boundless. Man breaks free through these challenges. Man breaks free from the limitations of perfection, of holiness, of perfect holiness, and one reaches into the complete, boundless and infinite, but only through the challenges. And he brings an interesting idea, which is mamish, in this piece of Be'er Ma'ayim Chaim, I see two chapters of Tanya. One is, he brings the idea, which he's basing it on the Arizal, that the root of Gevura is really much higher than the root of Chesed. Gevura is higher than Chesed. And therefore, he says, that souls that emanate from the side of Chesed are naturally more inclined towards a connection to God. Because in Chesed, there is more godly revelation, and if there's more godly revelation, there's less klipa, there's less yenikas achitzonim, the external darkness forces are not there on that side. The yenikas achitzonim is primarily on the left side. Therefore, he says, the neshamas that come from gevuras, they are more destined to fall, to struggle, to deal with a lot of darkness in their life, because they come from the side where the klipa is very, very intense. And we see this in the difference between the Kohanim and the Levim. Kohanim, the souls of the Kohanim come from Chesed, where there is more light. And the Levim, the Shorish of the Levim is from Gevura. And we know that today's days, Kohanim stand higher than the Levim. And the Levim is considered a lesser level. When Mashiach will come, the Arizal says that the people that are Kohanim, people that have souls of Levim, it doesn't mean that the halacha is going to change. But the people that are really the souls of the Levim are going to be born then as Kohanim. And they're going to serve in the Beis HaMikdash because the Levim are going to be higher than the Kohanim. Why? Because the Levim's shorish is from the side of Gevura. In today's days, Gevura is less than Chesed. When Mashiach comes, once we get rid of all the darkness and all the klipa, the root of Gevura, which is, represents intensity, holy intensity, is going to be revealed, and over there you're going to sense these believable. And that's what he explains. I mean, the way he develops it is that generally people that are from the side of Chesed are people that will be tzaddikim naturally, or be generally good, natural people, naturally holy people. People that come from Gevuras are very, very likely to become sinners. But the sages tell us that when a sinner does tshuva, b'makam shabali tshuva omdim, ein tzaddikim gemurim yecholim lamed. That the place where the bal tshuva stands, the perfect tzaddik can't stand. Because the pasuk says, shalom, shalom, peace, peace, la rachok ulakarov, to the one that was distant and the one that is close. Which is implying that the people that were distant are getting a bigger shalom aleichem from God than the people that were always close. The bali tshuva will get a greater smile, a deeper smile than the tzaddik. And the reason is because the bal tshuva's neshama has that intensity. That's why he was a rasha. That's why the klipas got to him. That's why he's fallen into darkness. But when he finally comes back, because we understand what when it's hapcha chashuchel and ahura, when darkness transforms to light, it's with an intensity. This is the idea. I mean, what he's really explaining is the idea that it says in Perek Zayin and Tanya that the rasha, when he does tshuva, the sinner, when he does tshuva, he has a yearning and a passion and a fervor and an excitement to connect to God much more than the tzaddik has. Because the tzaddik, his relationship is more mellow. The bal tshuva is intense, he's fiery, he's yearning, he's thirsting, he's longing. In the Be'er Ma'ayim Chaim style, he goes off to say certain things, like you can see he's talking about, you know, he's going to describe him. I mean, he's not Chas V'Shalom, he's a tzaddik gomer. But I'm saying he describes the idea that the bal tshuva is so explosive that he goes and to make up for, he feels the pain, the pain of his sins, that he will sit in the snow and he will sit amongst ants and he will fast and he will roll in the snow just to bring upon himself, and he will toivel himself in ice cold water to mortify his body. He so wants to rid himself from the impurity. He says he will literally be willing to jump into fire and burn for God. That's the bal tshuva. The tzaddik doesn't have that that burning, that fire in his soul. And he says, interesting, he says that in Bali Tshuva itself, there are Bali Tshuva that are in the coming from the Chesed side. They're not such intense Bali Tshuva. And then there are the Bali Tshuva that come from Gevura. They're the real intense Bali Tshuva. Another perek in Tanya that he's developing, you see he's explaining also in the same, is later in Tanya, where the Tanya speaks about the Levium being higher than the Kohanim. And he says, you see the quality of gold over silver. From Chesed comes silver, Kesef, silver. It's white color. From the left side, from Gevura, comes gold. And gold has fire in it. And that's why we know that gold is, the value of gold is far superior to the value of Kesef, of silver. It's only that the, as we said earlier, the left side is a far more challenging side. As we apply this to all of history, you can say that the time of the Beis HaMikdash is a time of Chesed, the time of exile, it's a time of Gevura. And we go through Gevura's Kashas. But in the end, as a result of all of this, and we transform all the darkness to light, we end up with a brilliant light, much brighter than which was original light. And he says, by Avram Avinu, Eliezer is pointing to this. And Eliezer says, Vashem Berech Es Adoni, Hashem blessed my master, not just with goodness, because Avram's life was first it was a, I forgot, he mentions one more idea, which is very important, that you see the sages say that Sadiqim, the righteous people, meaning, again, I'm not talking about over here the difference between Tzadikim and Balei Tshuva, but the general idea of Tzadikim and good people, their lives are first suffering and then they come to good days. It was first they go through hardships. Tzichilas and Yisurim. People that have it good from the beginning, they're living in God's kindness and God's benevolence. That's wonderful and that's good. But those that are challenged and hardships and go through, as we said before, either spiritual darkness or physical hardship, so they're being burnt by fire, by the dark side. It's extremely, extremely difficult. It's excruciating. But in the end, they come to great light. He says, take a look at Avram Avinu. His father was Terach. He's light coming from darkness. And then in his life itself, he went through lots of challenges and suffering and difficulties. Eventually, in the end of his life, he had all this blessing. And he had all this goodness. And that's the meaning. Vashem berech asadoini mo'od, with that bleak vol, with that Mashiach diga light, which is infinite because it's the transformation of darkness to light. And that's why it doesn't say vahu gadol and he's great, but vayigdal, he became great from the darkness, from the challenges, from the other side. Vayiten loy, and then Hashem gave him, it mentions eight blessings. What is the eight? Because he says you have the seven midos. Hashem, Avram Avinu had the purification hour, Sfira Sa'omer, which is all the seven midos. But he transcended to the eighth dimension. With the eight represents already the ma'od, the b'li gvul, the infinite, like Shavuos is also the eighth. Because Shavuos is the after 7 weeks, it's the eighth week. And that's the b'li gvul, that's ma'od, that's infinite, and that's boundless, and that's Mashiach Degalait. Hashem Berech HaSadoini Ma'od. And I mean, so how do we fit it into what we were talking about? And we were talking about earlier also. There is the details, and then there is coming back to Bali Tshuva, coming back to the moment of the infinite, of the Ein Sof. And but we come full circle. That's the idea. First, we have to work out in all the crevices and all the details, which involve the particulars. We're coming back, especially in today's days, as we are now finally docking the ship from exile back to Golos, we have to get back to that energetic Jewish neshamadig, transcendent, powerful excitement in being a Jew, which is the Bal Tshuva, which is the, as we said before, the doubling, which is the Ma'od, which is Bali Gvul. And we come full circle back to Avram Avinu, who was Hashem Berech Adonai Mi'od, and Moshiach represents this Ma'od. I had some more to say today, but Be'ezras Hashem, we're going to leave that for next week's class, and I hope this everyone joins together again next week, Thursday night. Let it be in Yerushalayim. Be'ezras Hashem.